Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for checking out the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy. This is one of my favorite podcasts of the year. We are reacting to Selection Sunday. I've got a handful of interviews with a series of coaches whose teams just had their tickets punched and found out their fate for the opening week of the NCAA tournament. But now we begin by talking to the NCAA Tournament Committee Chair, Matt Colagiovanni, Deputy Director of Athletics at Rutgers University. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. How do you describe the way that this process has unfolded in the last few weeks and months?
Well, thanks, Terry. Appreciate you, talking to me tonight. It's been a great process. We put a lot of work into it as we've gotten to this point of Selection Sunday. We've been working throughout the year with the RAC, which is our coaches committee that works with us for the past 4 to 5 weeks. We do weekly meetings with them. They help us with their information and how they, look at their own conferences and how they kind of do their own rankings. So they're a great resource for us. Just another piece of data that we use when we're here on Selection Sunday, just with using that as a resource. But very helpful, something we've used all season. So it's been a great process. We were very happy with the way the brackets went. Obviously, we had some, somebody who stole the bracket, obviously, where Michigan was able to come in there and get that. So we were very satisfied with the way we had the team selected.
How would you characterize the way that this weekend unfolded? You kind of already pointed to a pivotal moment, which was when, Michigan, who probably wasn't going to be as part of the at-large tournament field, won the Big Ten championship and automatic qualifier on Saturday night, beating Penn State, who obviously got into the at-large tournament field. We refer to that as a bid thief, so to speak. But then there was also a bullet dodge, so to speak, with respect to Georgetown's win over Villanova only hours earlier. So can you just kind of walk us through where the committee was at on Friday, how the meetings unfolded, and where your head was at on Saturday, and then ultimately where you ended up and what changes needed to be made on Sunday?
Sure. We meet on Saturday, so we're watching the games. We're following everything up until that point. I think you nailed it. It was important, obviously, for Georgetown to do what it did and take care of business in the championship game. Obviously, the Ivy was another important element when you look at, Princeton coming in, because that obviously swayed, how we were going to end up doing the final seedings. So we have a lot of scenarios that we do well in advance of Sunday. We have a lot of side-by-side comparisons. We look at a lot of criteria that's out there, from record to top 10, top 20 wins, RPI, best win, worst loss, head-to-head battles. We're looking at all of that. So there was definitely, obviously, with Princeton and Georgetown, that kind of paved the way for the weekend. And then Michigan, obviously, we were all closely watching that last night, because that obviously would affect today. So we were here early this morning, and we were right back at it.
So I've been forecasting the bracket or whatever, however you want to describe what I do, for about 15 years. And one of the things that has informed my perspective more than anything else is there was a run of years in the mid-2010s where top five wins appeared to be the overriding criteria. Setting that aside for a second, one of the elements of this process that you employ is you evaluate objective criteria, but you do so in a way which is, I suppose, guided but not dictated by the way in which the criteria is written, meaning that you can apply it in the ways that are deemed fit by the committee. How would you characterize how you rank ordered the importance of the individual criterion? Was there one aspect of a team's resume that when you compared it against other teams, be it for seating positions or for inclusion, rose above or mattered more?
We actually use all of it. So I think it wouldn't just be a team that has more top five wins. That's just one piece of criteria. So for us, there were a few teams that were close, and that's when you're looking at the full body of work. So we're looking, again, the top five, the top 20, the RPI plays a big part of it. Head-to-head is a really big part of it as well. We're looking at, top 15 wins as well. We're looking at... We even look at the RPI average of their overall season and where they're at. So it's one element. I wouldn't say one is a lot more than the other, but we're not looking at just the recent weeks either. We're looking at the full body of the season. So if somebody had a loss in February, do we not look? We're still looking at it, and we're looking at the full season's body of work when we look at all the stats.
Who was the first team out?
Penn.
And did that mean, was Penn State the last team in?
Yes.
So does that mean that you compared them side by side and determined that Penn State's resume was superior to Penn? Seems logical, right?
Yes, we had them side by side. We actually looked at that for a while. We do a lot of them side by side, but Penn State and Penn were one that we looked at from yesterday and then again this morning.
So when you did that, how would you say what were the, kind of the overriding elements that rose above in terms of deeming Penn State's resume to be more qualified than Penn's?
Yeah, sure. I'll start with overall record a little bit better. Top five. They had five wins in the top 20. They had four in the top 15. Their RPI is eight, obviously a little bit better. Their head-to-head, they beat Yale. Penn lost to Yale, and we kind of looked at all of that information when we were doing it. Again, it was obviously Penn had a very good resume, but you can look at some of these things as almost splitting hairs. But when you add in these factors, we just felt like Penn State was a little bit ahead of them.
No question. That was the way that I characterized it in my final analysis, was that, the resumes are very similar and they can be argued both ways. And my point of view was that, I predicted that Penn would be in, but that was on the basis of, kind of, like I explained earlier, my, kind of career-long point of view on what gets valued. But at the same time, it's an evolving entity, and it doesn't surprise me that a different decision was come to. I am interested in two other choices that were made, first being the decision to seed Johns Hopkins at three and Syracuse at four, because of a variety of factors there. And really what I'm interested in is just kind of like how the internal logic was applied, on a decision-to-decision basis. So to the extent that you can recall, why or how did the committee decide to seed Johns Hopkins over Syracuse when Syracuse had more top five wins and that head-to-head win?
Sure. We actually had we looked at it. We actually, as a committee, had Hopkins and Duke we were doing a lot of comparisons for. We thought Hopkins was a little closer to Duke with the overall body. They had six top 20 wins, obviously, we looked at. We understand that Hopkins did lose to Syracuse, but John Hopkins had the six wins. They did have a really good win against Virginia. They had head-to-head against, Virginia, Penn State, Maryland, Georgetown, and Michigan. Again, the resume of Syracuse is also very good, but when we were looking at that information side by side, that's kind of what it was. But, Syracuse did lose to Army, Cornell, Maryland. So again, it was very close, but we actually felt as a committee Hopkins was closer to Duke, which we did that analysis even after they lost today, but we felt like Duke was the strong number two.
Sure. Yeah, no, that was clear in my opinion as well. I thought that Duke's case as the number two seed was pretty well established, and understanding that, yeah, certainly there were teams trailing them that they deserved to be compared against, but I wasn't surprised by that decision. But I did mention that there were two that I wanted to inquire about. The other is the seeding decision between Maryland and Virginia. It's equivalent in some respects to the comparison between Hopkins and Syracuse. Maryland's resume in this basis, a little bit more like Syracuse's. Virginia's resume in terms of volume, a little bit more like Hopkins. What did you guys see when you put the Terps and the Cavaliers side by side?
Yeah, I think the big thing with Virginia is, I think if you look at it from just right now, wow, they lost like four in a row. But when you look at who they lost to, they lost the two, number one, two, and four RPI. So they, that was a tough one for us. We really needed to look. They didn't have a top five win, but again, that's not our overall mark. Their RPI was a five. Maryland's was a seven. They did beat Maryland, and they did lose to Hopkins. So, again, this was another one that was obviously tough. You get some really good teams. But I think Virginia also, had four top 20 wins. Maryland had three. So, we went back and forth. Again, the RPI does play a factor, but their losses, not that you want to say good losses, but I think Virginia had some pretty good losses. losing to obviously number one twice and then two and four. So that was kind of how we looked at them. But we did do a lot of analysis looking at that as well when we were going. We actually were comparing, you know, Virginia and Duke a lot when we were looking at information. So we had a few of these teams side by side as we were finalizing where we would rank them.
So just opening up the aperture a little bit more, one of the things that's going on within the sport more broadly, and then the NCAA as well, is an evaluation of the criteria itself. Understanding that the committee's job is really broad and very multifaceted on a year-long basis, but also very pointed in, you know, let's say a one-day, a two-week basis, whatever the case may be. I'm just curious if you can, you know, kind of share anything that you might know here, have heard speculated about with respect to reconsidering or, you know, opening up the idea of alternative NCAA tournament selection criteria for men's Division I lacrosse going forward.
I would say right now we always, you know, we'll look at other ideas, but right now we're going off the traditional one. That's obviously how we did this one. But I think, you know, we have meetings once a year over the summer that we kind of listen to all stuff that comes in throughout the year, and we'll take a look at it and, you know, obviously analyze it and just see, you know, if it's something that is valuable if we move it forward.
Matt, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the tournament. Which quarterfinal are you going to be at?
I'm not sure which one yet, but I will definitely be at the Final Four. So hopefully I'll get to meet you in person at the Final Four, but I really appreciate this, and it was fun, so thank you.
Absolutely. Safe travels home. Look forward to an incredible tournament to unfold over the course of the next 3 weeks. And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Sacred Heart head coach John Basti, whose team defeated the Manhattan Jaspers to win the MAC championship and send Sacred Heart to the NCAA tournament for the first time. Coach Basti, it was an incredible game. It was an incredible display of emotion when you guys won, and it's certainly an earned opportunity on the basis of how much this team has improved. How do you describe the way the last 36 at this point. How has the last 36 hours unfolded for you?
It's been pretty surreal, man. First of all, thanks for having me on. This is pretty cool. It's just been really exciting. I think it kind of sank in this morning when I started watching the games at noon today. And I was like, I got nothing to do, but I got a lot to do. But it was just, and then I'm watching people win games, and I'm watching people playing games. And it just kind of was like, wow, we just did that yesterday. And like when I woke up this morning, it was like, did that really just happen? But it did. And it's just been a really cool experience. Not just the last 36 hours, but kind of the last couple months, just the way things have unfolded and how things just kept progressing. And we just felt like we kept getting better. And I still think we could get better. You know, I still think we're kind of like at an 85. I think we could probably, this team is limitless, just the way we play and how hard these guys work and how much they just love being together. They don't want to end. So it's been a really cool experience just being around these guys for the last few months.
Let's dig into that a little bit. Why? How? How did this team improve so much?
I think it was mindset and the way we approached our daily, just what we did on a daily basis. When we came in the beginning of the year in August, we had our first meeting and we said, actually, when we left last year in May, after the Siena lost in the playoffs last year, we were like, if we don't make it to the conference finals, next year is a failure. And which sounds like a good thing to say, but based on everything that we teach and everything we believe, it's the wrong thing to say to these guys. And I'll explain that in a second. But like, I've been working with Coach Jim Stagnita for the last year, or really 2 years, on mindset and just kind of understanding that all these outside factors are irrelevant because you can't control them. And controlling the controllables is something that I've been working on personally with Coach Staggs. And we started using that with the team. And as the fall progressed, then we came back in August and we said the same thing. And as the fall progressed, we realized something was missing. There was very competitive practices. Guys were getting after each other, but there was like no connectivity. There was a lot of like in like almost bickering amongst the guys. And I was, something was just not right. And I wasn't at practice one day. I was in the city for to do something, and I called Coach Doctor. Him and Coach Fox were running practice one day, and he was just like, Coach Doctor, Coach Chris Doctor never yells. And he yelled at practice that day. He got mad. And I was like, okay, what happened? And he explained that it was just very tidy. And the guys were like, holding each other accountable, and guys were going after each other for doing that. And I thought about it that night. Like, okay. And I talked to a couple of the captains, and I was like, let's think about this. Let's sleep on this. We'll meet in the morning and figure out exactly what we can do to solve this problem. And they were like, that's a good idea. And so the next morning, every morning I go to work, I listen to Boomer and Gio. Boomer and Sison and Greg Giannotti and WFAN in the morning, and they're big on golf. And they were talking about how they were watching the Golf Channel, and one of these pros steps up and crushes a ball 200-something yards. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to be able to do this all the time. Steps up, and he shanks one. And he's like, see, expectation is a thief of joy. And I was like, and they were talking about this on the show, and I was like, wow. It's amazing just the way things work. And I thought about that quote, and just when I met with our captains, we started like focusing on that. Then I called Coach Stagnita, and him and I focused on that. We figured out a problem, sat with our captains, sat with our coaches, and we decided. And then later that morning, I had a team meeting, and I was just like, this is not working. And I was like, this is all I expect from you is two things. 100% compete level every day, and a great attitude every day. And whatever happens, happens. We'll figure it out. But that's all I want from you. And they were just like, you can almost feel the bubble burst. And like the shoulders just got, the tension left the room. And because we all came together, captains, coaches, and figured out a way to work a problem that we thought we were having. And from that point on, everything changed. And then in the beginning of the season, we were dealing with some adversity, didn't play well in a couple games. And then after Holy Cross, we just knew we could be better. And almost the same type of thing happened. And then we just took off and started with Fairfield. And we gained more confidence and started playing free and started playing without concern for, well, what if the goalie makes a save? I can't shoot the ball. Or what if I approach wrong and the defender beats me? It's like, you can't control that. It's irrelevant. So just, you know how to play lacrosse. You know how to play defense. Coach Fox taught you and worked crazy with you on the basic fundamentals. You know how to shoot. Coach Doctor's spent hours with you in individuals and practice on shooting and stick work. You know what to do. Just have faith, have belief in yourself, and go and do it. And that's when it just kind of took off. And it's been pretty cool since then. It's been a lot of fun. That was a long answer, I'm sorry.
It was awesome. And there's a ton that I could dig into, but I do want to give some shine to some of your players. And Alex Pazienza has had a star turn in recent weeks. I mean, he's been one of the most consistent goalkeepers in recent youth college lacrosse. When I watch him play, and I felt this way when I saw him play in high school, I was like, that is what it looks like when a linebacker plays goalie. And I thought you were really funny and awesome in your post-game comment when you were talking about the diving save that he had and the role that played just in the way that the game unfolded. How important is Alex to your team?
Paz is important in more ways than one. He is, I think we got a couple of guys in our team, some of our captains especially, that drive the energy bump. We have a bunch of guys in our team that don't play that drive the energy bus. But Paz is like the epitome of that. He's 100 miles an hour, 100% of the time. And I think what he's been able to do is harness that. And him and I have talked about it. We worked on it in the fall a bit. And he's worked with Coach Joe Zukauskas, our goalie coach, and Coach Doc, who helps out with the goalies. He does a lot of work with the goalies too. They've really focused on that mindset of controlling the controllables. And like what, and I believe he was also working with Coach Staggs a little bit on that. But it was just taking his superpower. more of excitement and energy and toughness and competitive. Terry, this dude is as competitive as anybody you'll ever meet in every aspect, weight room, runs, everything. And like focusing that mindset on moving forward consistently, and he just harnessed that and he used it. And as the fall went on, you could see him, like, he just changed and his mindset got better and the guys played harder for him. And then he played harder for him. And then it was like the offensive guys were like, hey, if we screw up, it's okay. We got pads in our defense. It's like, we're going to get the ball back. And so the offense started playing a little bit more free and taking some more chances. And it just kind of, the whole group together started feeding off of each other. And Paz was a huge part of that. He's not the only part, but he's a very big part of it. And it's, I got to give him and, like I said, Coach Joe a lot of credit and Paz a lot of credit for understanding that about himself and being willing to work on himself to make himself a player. But more importantly, Terry, he's just become a better, like a great dude. Like he's always been a great dude, but he's become a better dude. And I think that's been part of the whole situation for him. And I love Paz. He's great, man. I love hanging out. I love seeing him every day, and he's always jacked up. The kid never stops smiling. It's like constant excitement for him, and it's cool. And all those four guys, our four goalies, work really hard together. They get along really well. They're always supporting each other. They're always jacked up for each other, and it's a good group. It's a good group.
Well, I'm sure that he's looking forward to the opportunity to take on the Albany Great Danes. And you guys play on Wednesday in the opening round game. What's that mean? What are you looking forward to? And what do you know about Coach Scott Marr's team?
I'm looking forward to practice tomorrow. That's kind of what I'm looking forward to right now. Getting the hotels and figuring out our bus. And we'll talk about Albany around 9 or 10 o'clock tomorrow with the staff. As far as looking forward to them on that aspect of it. But what I do know about Scott Marr from my time at Hartford is he's a man. He's an awesome dude. I've always loved Albany because you know what you're going to get. You're going to get an honest effort from a bunch of kids that play really hard and play really fast. And you're going to be tested because their compete level is extremely high. That's just what I know from when we were for the 5 years that I was able to coach against Coach Marr in the America East. I expect that on Wednesday. And I guarantee you, Coach Marr is going to expect that from us. Coach Marr, I would consider Coach Marr pretty good. And I know Coach Doc for the Haudenosaunee this summer and last year at the World Games. And so there's a lot of connectivity there between our staffs. And, I think he's extremely supportive of us as we are of them. And, I'm just looking forward to that competition on Wednesday. I think it's going to be a great game. It's going to be fast. It's going to be exciting. And, if you're a fan of high, like up tempo lacrosse, you're going to want to watch this game. Really we're just focusing on getting our guys set for tomorrow and dealing with finals and scheduling practice for the right time and making sure they're all set and trying to find a place to eat on Wednesday before the game is really kind of what I'm concerned about,
John Basti, if this whole college coaching thing doesn't work out, you've got a career in promotion. You can be the next Don King in terms of the way that I am jacked up to watch the Pioneers take on the Great Danes in about, what are we looking at, 72 hours? And I hope, what is the typical go-to meal for Sacred Heart when you're on the road?
So, depends. We're big fans of just like Jersey Mike's subs, or they're just place we go to. Coach Doc's got a little deli we go to, the Brooklawn Deli over there in Fairfield. They hook us up with some food, but our pregame meal is usually some grilled chicken, a little steak, some potatoes. They don't eat the veggies, but I order them because I like them. And then a salad, some rolls, a lot of water. But that's kind of what's been our week. We changed from your typical Italian menu, and those guys are not going to like that because they're talking about chicken parm. But we went away from the chicken parm and we went to kind of a grilled chicken and steak meal. And the guys, it seems to be working. it seems to be working. So we ain't changing it now, man. We're just gonna keep rolling.
No doubt.
Rolling
with the same food. We can put the, I'm sure that there are some listeners of this podcast in the capital region who can hit you up with some recommendations on a good place for grilled chicken and steak on Wednesday afternoon.
Oh man, I can't wait to get all the emails. Those are fun.
John Bassey, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on the win.
Thanks,
and
Perry.
Good luck as you prepare for Albany. We look forward to watching you on Wednesday.
Thanks, brother. Have a good night. I appreciate the time.
All right, John, I got to call. And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Towson head coach Sean Nedelin, whose Tigers emerged as CAA champions with a win over Delaware on Saturday and found out their fate. They're heading to the JMA Wireless Dome to take on the number 4 seed, Syracuse Orange. In the first round of the NCAA tournament, Coach Nedelin, congratulations.
Thank you, Terry. I appreciate it.
So what did you think, how did you react when you found out that you guys were going to be taking on the Syracuse Orange?
You know, we know we'd be taking on somebody. So, you know, we were just excited to see our name pop up and know, you know, where we were going and be able to travel up and, you know, be able to be tested in an environment that we haven't played in a long time will be, you know, a great opportunity for these guys.
So, let's just shift gears back and talk a little bit about the CAA tournament. What do you attribute the success that you guys had against Delaware to?
Our guys just played so, so hard. You know, it was evident from the start that, you know, they're ready to go. There was no hangover from the semifinal game and, you know, the one day rest and playing against a tough Delaware team. You know, the energy was high, the focus was dialed in, and, you know, the guys were ready to earn it. So, you know, we challenged them to really make plays in the middle of the field to try to, you know, swing momentum or keep momentum, and we did that really consistently in the first half, and I think that was a big tone setter for us. So the guys were, again, they were hungry all season, you know, and they earned that opportunity to be in the CAA championship game, and they took full advantage of it.
You're 13-3, have won 9 consecutive games. This is a team that, by the standards that you had set in the last decade, essentially, it was coming off of a few lean years. How do you attribute or how do you describe the progress that this group has made, even just dating back to 2023, and how does that give the group confidence when it comes to turning your attention toward winning an NCAA tournament game?
Yeah, there's a lot of self-assessment, you know, within our program, you know, really to come into this year. You always at the end of a, you know, at the end of your season, at the end of a year, you know, at least we do, we always reflect back and, you know, all right, what did we feel like was really a positive, you know, part of the process, what were maybe some roadblocks that we didn't handle or prepare for, we can be better from. So really assessing what we've been doing, not just last year, but the previous years, you know, the personnel we had coming back. And, you know, we did some things differently, you know, this year, especially in the fall, pushing back our kind of competitive segment from, you know, starting in the middle of September to starting, the first week in October. And extending that into the middle of November to have more time together closer to the start of our preseason. And, you know, we had 2 weeks of team practice before we scrimmaged Virginia and Richmond, and we didn't look great in those, but we were okay with that, you know, because we had a lot to build off of coming off those scrimmage for 3 more weeks of practice. So taking that, really having a really strong senior group that was serious and focused, had, you know, kind of the reins of the team at the, you know, at this point with being the leaders, and those guys really just having a very positive effect on the team and being able to pull those, you know, pull the rest of the team with them along the way throughout the fall into the winter, and handle, you know, the early part of the spring, you know, with some adversity as well as success, all in stride, and know that we just want to keep, you know, evolving and keep developing and keep improving, was a lot of our mentality as we were going throughout the season.
You mentioned at the beginning of your answer about personnel, and certainly there's a lot that we can dive into. But one guy that has popped and is in bona fide first-team All-American consideration is a sophomore midfielder in Mikey Wyshar. What does he bring to this team?
Mikey brings a dynamic player. You know, he's very dangerous with the ball on the stick. He can get separation. You know, he's a volume shooter, and, you know, sometimes that goes really well for us where he's scoring a lot of goals, you know, on a lot of shots, or, you know, sometimes it doesn't go as well. But he's got some of that green light where he can create and, you know, opportunities for himself, but also open up his teammates just from the attention that he draws. So really, you know, this was his first full year of being able to play in our system. Last year, he was hurt all fall. So he really didn't catch his stride until CAA play last year. So it was great to see him, you know, come out this year and have a strong year, you know, from the start and get a lot of momentum going. But he's really had great chemistry with Josh Weber and Chuck Gallagher on that first midfield. You know, he's recognizing his role within our offense. Our offensive guys, you know, all are doing their 1-6, and Mikey is definitely, you know, a part of that.
Shifting the focus ahead, you mentioned that your players haven't had an opportunity to play in the Dome. I'm wondering how familiar you are with Syracuse from a personnel standpoint. Have you watched them on film because they played a team that you were scouting and preparing for?
Yeah, we've seen them a little bit, you know, on film, not a ton recently, just with, you know, being in conference play. You know, and no one really in our conference playing those guys recently. But, you know, they're a team that's, you know, on TV. So you catch a quarter here or there. And I remember catching, I think, the fourth quarter of their game at Cornell. And, that was a really wild ending, you know, the fourth quarter in overtime. So, again, you know, they're a highly touted team. You know, they got a lot of talent. And are having a strong year.
So this is a little bit of an off-the-wall question, but I like these types of questions. One of the most viewed clips, probably in the last decade in the sport of lacrosse, is Joe Sider's goal against Syracuse in the 2017 quarterfinals. I don't really even have a question. Your thoughts?
It's ironic you bring that up because my defensive coordinator at the time of that game in 2017, Dan Cauchy, when the selections came out and saw that we were playing Syracuse, Dan texted me just like over under on, you know, how many times Sider's shot is on social media and stuff like that. So again, it's something that's, you know, synonymous with that, you know, that 2017 playoff run that we had. It was, you know, Joe was a tremendous player for us, a special player, and, you know, it was just really impressive shot, and you know, brought in our team offensive mindset into how that shot was created with a great off ball seal and him to shoot off of it. But it was, you know, it's something that has obviously been around for a while, and, you know, it's just a fun moment in Towson lacrosse history.
As we record at 10:22 p.m. on May 5th, I can confirm that former Syracuse goalie Evan Malloy has also posted on social media an acknowledgement of the fact that that is the matchup this coming weekend. But I want to finish by saying one of the elements of this bracket that is very interesting is Towson's hosting a quarterfinal, which by rule means that you guys are funneled into playing at home if you were to advance. And this question isn't about Syracuse. It's not about looking ahead and winning a game. But I do want to give you the opportunity to speak to how important it would be to play a quarterfinal in front of your home fans. And given the fact that, you know, Towson has anteed up and taken on the responsibility of hosting a quarterfinal, which will surely be incredibly well attended, how exciting is the opportunity given the importance of that weekend for college lacrosse?
Yeah, it'd be wonderful. It'd be wonderful for the game of lacrosse to come to United Stadium and experience everything that Towson can offer. You know, we got a great university and a great community to support it. There's a reason why it's here, you know, because the NCAA sees it as a value. You know, we have a fairly new president who's a big lacrosse fan, and our AD is obviously a big lacrosse fan as well, so they'll be behind it 100%. You know, so again, it'll be a wonderful opportunity. You know, we just hosted the CAA tournament by earning the number one seed and hosting rights, and, you know, Towson, you know, delivered on a high level with doing it professionally, but also catering to the, you know, to being able to have the crowd have a great experience, and, you know, people in town from, you know, from all over the country coming in to watch their teams and support them. So, you know, it's a very exciting opportunity. You know, I really applaud our administration for making it happen and NCAA for granting it, because, you know, Towson is a wonderful place to watch lacrosse, as we've hosted women's Final Fours and the Women's World Games and tournaments before.
Sean Adelin, congratulations to the Tigers on getting back to the NCAA tournament. Thank you for joining, and good luck this week. I know that it's a whirlwind, but it's always one of the best weeks of the season, so enjoy it.
100%. Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Syracuse head coach Gary Gate, whose Orange will be hosting the Towson Tigers, fresh off of a CAA championship. Syracuse having lost to Duke 18-13 in the ACC semifinals their last time out. Coach Gate, congratulations on a selection in the NCAA tournament and the opportunity to host a first-round NCAA tournament game in the Dome. What's it mean for you? What does it mean for this team to have that opportunity?
It's incredible. You know, we've been, you know, this is my third year coaching, and we haven't been in the tournament for a couple years, and we're super excited to have the opportunity, and you know, to be in the top four is amazing. Really shows the progress that we've made as a coaching staff and where this team's going. So, you know, and we've beaten, you know, more of the top five than anybody. So I'm excited about the opportunity ahead.
No doubt. So obviously this is a program that both has championship standards, but also, as you have spoken about over the course of this season and over the course of the last 3 years, it needed to follow the steps, right? You can't skip steps. You had to work incrementally. You had to learn. You talked about after the Virginia game and winning a close game against a quality opponent about how you felt like you had implemented the lessons that you had learned in some of those losses earlier in the season. So now when you reorient around, winning in May is different from winning in April, March, February. What does that look like for this group?
I think it's pretty continue to what we've been doing, and that's really just sticking to the game plan, and execution is our number one issue. When we go off the game plan, we struggle and we don't do well. But when we're locked in and the players are fired up and excited and they're doing what we ask them to do, we have success. So we're super thrilled to get this going.
So in terms of getting hot at the right time, that's an expression you hear all the time. I actually don't believe it. I think that there's tremendous benefit to losing in the last game of the regular season or conference tournament, as long as you get into the NCAA tournament, because it means that when the stakes are the highest, you have your team's full attention. They are angry. They show up to practice ready to prove a point relative to their last time out. How is this team's mood?
Well, you know, I think we're going to learn from the game that we just played against Duke, that you take some time off and you come out and you know, you read your press and you think you feel really good about it, that you maybe need to work a little harder and be a little more prepared and be a little more energized to go out and play and take it to the other team. So I think we got something valuable out of that, and I think that's going to help us moving forward for sure. You know, not having coming off a win, you know, there's a chip on the shoulder, as you say, and we're fired up and ready to go.
I assume you saw a little bit of Towson film this year. You know, you played Hopkins, they had played Towson about a month earlier. You played Virginia, they had played Towson about 6 weeks earlier. That being said, you haven't played them. This isn't a group that you're wildly familiar with. How much do you know about them? And what is the kind of process of building a game plan essentially from scratch with now 7 days to prepare?
Well, that, obviously, that's plenty of time to prepare. You know, we're used to, if you look at our schedule, we played the short turnaround games in order to give us experience in those situations. And, you know, so we, you know, we think this is an opportunity that we can, you know, prep and prepare and be ready to play. Absolutely. 7 days is more than enough, and we're excited about it, and we know they're awesome.
They are a really interesting first-round opponent because, you know, you're favored as the home seed, right? Like, that's just kind of the nature of it. But oftentimes, a team in your position would be taking on an opponent that might be really good in one area of the field, but has a weakness that can be exploited in another area of the field. And that is not the case for Towson. They're roughly equivalent. You know, they're like a mid-teens team in terms of offense and defense. They can face off, and they're good in the goal. So from that standpoint, do you kind of think it's a blessing because it's going to ensure that they get your team's attention, and in terms of those preparation moments, there's nothing they can take advantage of?
Yeah, you know, this is, you know, they have our attention. You know, we prepare for every team because we, you know, in this world of lacrosse, upsets are happening all the time. We saw it throughout the tournament championships for all the conferences that you got to be prepared. You got to take everybody seriously, first of all. So, and we know that Towson's a good team. We've seen very little, but we've seen a little, and they're pretty strong in every aspect of the game. And, you know, probably the only other, the one that's right there with them is St. Joe's. And, you know, we certainly look at as those two teams as serious contenders and a tough matchup. So, we'll be prepared for Towson, and, you know, we're not taking them lightly.
Gary Gate, congratulations again. I'm getting the Orange back to the NCAA tournament, where the lacrosse world is well familiar with Syracuse being. Good luck as you guys continue to prepare for Towson. Look forward to watching that game on Sunday and enjoy it. Because one of the things is, this is always one of the funnest weeks of the season. Goes by so fast, and yet, if you don't savor it, what are you actually doing it for, right?
Oh, this is why we do. This is why we coach. This is why our kids play at Syracuse. It's to play in championship lacrosse in the NCAA tournament. So we're super excited for Sunday, and we're thrilled to have this game and this opportunity to host Towson in the Dome.
You're the man. Gary Gate, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. We look forward to watching you on Sunday.
Thanks, Gary.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Denver head coach Matt Brown, whose Pioneers are seeded number 5 in the NCAA tournament and will be hosting the Michigan Wolverines in the first round. Coach Brown, congratulations. What do you think about Michigan coming to town?
Wow, thanks, Terry. Thanks for having me on. And just, you know, as I just mentioned to you, just excited for our guys to get a chance to continue to play together. You know, obviously we were disappointed, you know, last Thursday in the Big East semifinal, and, you know, came back on Saturday and, you know, watched the film and didn't know what this today was going to look like. But excited that we get a chance to play. You know, it's, playing in this NCAA tournament is a huge honor. It seems like it continues to get harder and harder, to get into it every single year. And, you know, we get to face a really hot and talented, you know, Michigan team, you know, coming to Denver on Saturday.
So you mentioned how difficult it is, and it's not just about how many good teams there are that are vying for spots, be they at large or automatic qualifiers. It's also about how hotly contested these conference tournaments are. Never better exemplified than by the fact that you beat Villanova in the regular season to open Big East play, and then you take them on in their building again in the semifinals. And that game ended as dramatically as pretty much any game in the conference tournament weekend with a disallowed goal at the end and other kind of drama that unfolded as well. How do you describe that game and what's it like to kind of build on that, so to speak, and take the disappointment of a loss into the week of preparation with an opportunity to get back in the saddle?
Yeah, it was, it was a energetic game. You know, it was an emotional game. You know, it was, you know, kind of going down 4-0 to start off, and then, you know, clawing our way back to having a 7-6, lead, and then going back down, and stuff that happened. It's just that this time of year, you know, there's so many games that are, you know, watching them that were like that. And that's what makes it, you know, exciting. And, credit to Villanova. They played a tremendous game. You know, I felt like they were buzzing, you know, right from the get-go. And then you fast forward and you look at, you know, what happened in their game with Georgetown in the Big East final, you know, them going down and then coming back and being up at the end. It's just tremendous lacrosse, and that's what May's all about. You know, for us, it's still about continuing to focus on getting better. And we talked about that even after the game on Thursday night. You know, we're going to continue to correct things that we weren't great at. And we've talked about that. We've addressed those things, and here we are. You know, now we get a chance to play again and focus on a new opponent, somebody that we haven't played a ton against. You know, we actually scrimmaged Michigan a few years back. We'd had an exhibition at their place, and then they came out here for one as well. I think we played them maybe in one of their first years in Division One, but we really haven't had many games against them. So excited to have them here, Peter Barton and our guys. It's a new season. You know, I think it's a fresh season for everybody that's in the NCAA tournament, and we're just excited to get going and practice on Monday.
Your team is 11-3, and one of the elements of this is I'm as interested in how you would describe your team wins games as I am pretty much any other coach that I could ask that question to, because and push back if you disagree with me, it feels like what this team does is figure out a way to win. It's not as if you can only win one way, is part of the point I'm trying to make. In addition to which, you know, you can score 17 goals against Cornell if you need to. You can score 4 goals in the last 90 seconds or whatever it was against Hopkins if you need to do that. You can beat Providence 7-4. You can do a lot of different things when you either play well in some facets and not well in others, or just ultimately your back's against the wall and you got to figure it out. How do you describe it? What is it about this team? How do you win these games?
Well, we talked about it right from the beginning of the year. I feel like if you want to be a really good team, you got to find ways to win in different ways. And you know, I talked a lot about recently with looking at our hockey team and how they did that, you know, being a high powered offense at the beginning of the hockey season and then going into the NCAA tournament, winning 3 games by the score of 2-1 and then a 2-0 game in the championship. Like, you never would have thought that if you looked at that team early on in the year. And I think that the same can kind of be held true for us. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, how you do it, but it's a matter that you do get it done. You know, we don't talk a lot about, you know, defensive end or the offensive end. We talk about us. You know, we talk about, you know, controlling the game and knowing the strengths of our opponents and understanding how we're going to be able to get this thing done. And if we have to sit on the ball, then we sit on the ball. If we have to turn it up and ride and push the ball in transition and ask our rope unit to be more offensive than not, then we'll do that. If we have to get in the hole, with all of our offensive middies and just take away their transition or even for that matter, sub our guys off early, late in the shot clock, just to make sure that the other team doesn't get that. You know, we've kind of seen it all. And I think that's the beauty of our sport. There's so many different ways that you can play this great game. We've played a tremendous schedule against, you know, really talented teams that play all differently. And I think for our guys, it's especially with this year's group, they've got a great, you know, upperclassmen group, 7 super seniors that decided to come back for their 5th year. We got a great senior class, 7 captains that have led this group all the way through since September. They just they love battling with each other. And I think tonight when we sat in the selection show room up in the Gottesfeld room, you know, you felt that joy when they heard their name announced. And so, you know, here we are and we get an opportunity to prepare for a really, really talented Michigan team.
So obviously you've mentioned Michigan, and they're a team that is not just coming off of a run to the Big Ten championship, but also they did the same thing last year. It is uncanny how similar their 2024 season has unfolded relative to their 2023 season. And, you know, if you're you and you hear that, you'll be like, oh, well, they won their first round tournament game on the road. What does – I don't want to say like – I'm not going to ask about like the magic in a bottle element that it feels like they might have, because obviously you have no control over that, and I don't expect you to know anything about that. But in terms of just making sure that your team is prepared, has the proper respect, and understands that, you know, they've got a team showing up that's going to be fighting for their lives, and they're familiar with it because they've been doing it for about a month now. What is that message like relative to what you said earlier about knowing your opponent's strengths?
Well, I think you see it in watching their films, and I had a chance to go through a couple of them already. It just, you could see them, you know, playing with a ton of energy, and you know, they watch their semifinal game against Hopkins, and then their, you know, the phenomenal championship game the other night. You know, you sense that about them, and so they're really talented, you know, in all aspects of the game. You know, they've got a great. They got a great group up front. I think they've got a tremendous offensive coordinator, and they're really good at the face-off X. I think they've got one of the best, you know, D middies in the country, and you know, their defensive unit is buttoned up because they're extremely well coached. And so, you know, obviously, you know, they've had success at this time of the year. You know, they did it last year. They're doing it now. But I think from a standpoint of the NCAA tournament, everybody's starting fresh. Everybody's fighting for their lives, and everybody needs to kind of have that little bit of angst, you know, of you know, it's survive in advance. We all know that. And so I'm just, again, you know, we're gonna take it day by day. We're gonna work on preparation. We're gonna continue to focus on us. And I know it's gonna be a huge challenge, you know, for us, and it's gonna be a great battle.
Matt Brown, really appreciate you joining us on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations again to the Pioneers on a fine season, and we look forward to watching you take on the Wolverines on Saturday.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.